Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Great show today. If you're a baseball fan, we have Tom Verducci from SI, MLB Network, and Fox in studio with me. Covered a lot of ground in 30 minutes. Houston Astros, baseball's marketing issues, how to fix the game, the new playoff format that's been proposed. Unbelievable insight from Tom Verducci, obviously as good as it gets, best in the business in covering baseball. And he was phenomenal. So if you're a baseball fan, I guarantee you will enjoy this podcast. If you missed last week's show, we had Mitchell Schwartz from the Kansas City Chiefs, offensive lineman, discussing the Chiefs Super Bowl run and also Mitchell's love of food. He's a big foodie. And I also had a couple of colleagues in here to do a little roundtable on Netflix's Don't F with Cats, which was a great documentary. So also Dan Orlovsky from ESPN was on a couple of weeks ago. Brian Curtis of The Ringer, Kevin Harlan, Brent Musburger, Chris Long. So if you missed any of those, go into the archives and check it out. And if I could beg for a moment, if you're not a subscriber, hit the subscribe button. It helps me tremendously. So throw the subscribe on there. Good guest coming up next week. I don't want to plug it, but because things happen. But supposed to have a good ESPN NBA person on next week. All right, that is all I have to tell you now to get things rolling. Let's now go to a great conversation with Tom Verducci. All right, joining me now, very impromptu. I was kind of rude. Saw Tom Verducci in the SI hallways and asked him to come on the SI Media Podcast, and he was nice enough to do that because he does not get to the SI office too much. So we're thrilled to have you, and thanks for coming on the pod.
Yeah, I stopped by on my way, essentially changing planes from Arizona to Florida.
What you still write for SI, which we love here at SI. You have MLB Network. Are there any other gigs? Because in this business, it's like everyone has to have multiple gigs. No one has one gig these days. Well, and you do Fox.
And Fox, too.
Fox, yeah, Fox.
So that's enough. Yeah,
does it ever get too much for you with, you know, all of the sort of, I mean, SI is writing, but you got, you know, MLB Network and Fox could be similar.
Yeah, it does get too much, and I'll tell you when it gets too much.
Yeah.
When it's time to do expenses.
Oh, yes. No one likes doing that. That's for sure.
Three different forms I got to fill out.
It's interesting. MLB Network and Fox. And then you have, obviously, the biggest story in baseball in a while is this Astros scandal. Do you have to walk sort of a fine line with it? Not to sort of... I mean, you're such a veteran of this, where I feel like you're an untouchable. But do you ever have to be a little careful and not... you know, anger any bosses or anything like that?
No. I think the only care is something that you would do anyway, which is stick to the facts, man. And there's a lot of speculation out there. I get it. The Astros are the ones who've caused all this suspicion. But I think the guiding principle for what I do is always stay as close to the facts as possible, and you don't get in trouble that way.
Yeah, I don't want to rehash the whole thing. It's been done to death, and with the buzzers and the obviously with the video stuff. But I am fascinated in how this now plays out over the course of the season. I mean, you even have gambling websites offering bets on how many Astros batters will get hit this season. And I know, listen, you know, I talked to a handful of major league players that I've gotten to know over the years. You obviously talk to, you know, thousands of them. I cannot believe the anger from players and the open anger. And one thing I found interesting, I'm curious for your take on this. I've asked players to come on this podcast to discuss the Astros. Any current player I've asked, they've all said, no, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to pour gasoline on fire. Every single ex-player I've asked has wanted to do it, and we just couldn't line it up logistically with time and day. The ex-players really seem like they're ready to unload. Are you surprised by how the players have reacted to this?
The active players, yes, yeah. I am. That initial wave that came out, you had people who are not known for being outspoken. I'm talking about the Mike Trouts of the world, Cody Bellinger, Clayton Kershaw. I mean, some of the biggest stars in the game did not hesitate to call them out because of what they did. And I think, especially once Bellinger came out and was so strong about it, I think he sort of laid the runway for other players to say, okay, now he can go. Now, we didn't hear from these players back when the commissioner first issued his report January 13th. You know, once they saw which way the wind was blowing, I think it was easy for them to come out and start ripping the Astros. And again, I'm not defending the Astros, but yeah. I think their position to kind of step out of their comfort zone was made easier by Bellinger.
And the press conference didn't help. Where?
No, absolutely yeah. not. And man, that's PR 101, what not to do, right? I mean, I actually think the Astros handled themselves well in the clubhouse setting where they're much more comfortable. And I thought they were contrite. They were, you know, they did say they were sorry, but when you first begin, that first impression, you can't get back, right? And they put two guys behind a podium who should not have been there. The team had met the previous day. You had to know that Carlos Correa was your go-to guy if you want to have someone in a formal setting without questions. It was not Bregman. It was not Altuve. You saw the way they reacted at their fan fest. Unfortunately for the Astros, people saw that on live television and they were done. They didn't pay attention to what happened in the clubhouse afterwards. And that includes most players. And it's not in the clubhouse. They see it. I don't think people stuck with it to hear the other things people said in the clubhouse. So that really damaged, I think, the Astros among their peers in the game, the press conference setting. Again, if you didn't have that press conference setting and you just opened up the clubhouse and these guys said what they said, it would be bad, but I don't think it would have been to this level.
It's interesting because the Astros now have this history with bad PR. You know, we saw it during the playoffs with the women reporters in the locker room. Someone there is not doing their job properly, it seems like.
I would totally agree, and I would say some of this is on MLB as well. MLB has to know that, man, this was, 5 weeks in the making. You got to work with the Astros to move the game forward, not just the Astros brand. And they have to say, all right, Jim Crane, what's your plan? How are you going to handle the first media availability since the scandal broke? Oh, we're going to put Altuve and Bregman behind a podium. They might read from a statement and look like they're doing a hostage video. Well, no, you're not doing that. Here's what you're going to do. They clearly need help when it comes to addressing these issues, and apparently they didn't get it.
So how do you think this plays out now over the 2020 season? Do you think it lingers all year? Do you think, you know, the first month of the season, players will get plunked, we'll move on from it? You know, it's interesting because one of the knocks on all sports these days, not just baseball, but football, basketball, is that the players are too chummy with each other. Does that end up what ultimately happens here and, you know, everything all is forgiven? Or do you think it plays out all year long?
Well, the whole hit-by-pitch thing, I think, is being overplayed. You're not going to see guys getting hit left and right. First of all, MLB wouldn't allow it. I mean, they don't allow it in any circumstance now. You know, we've seen pitchers thrown out of games for throwing change-ups or breaking pitches that hit batters, right?
Right.
The game is very sensitive to that. The old-school mentality is not there with most of these pitchers, especially anybody in their 20s. It's just not how the game is played. And again, if it's that obvious, MLB is not going to allow that happen a second time, never mind all season long. They'll get hit. I mean, you have to pitch inside, especially Bregman is a guy right on the plate. Have to pitch him inside, move him off the plate. But you know, every pitch that's inside now is going to be It's going to be referenced back to the scandal. Oh, he threw inside on purpose. Yeah. He hit him on purpose.
Altuve was hitting a spring training game this week.
With an off-speed pitch. But, you know, it got everybody's attention. Right. So my point on that is that I don't think it's going to be playing whack-a-mole all year long. But here's the thing. The Astros are not getting away from this. Time is not going to heal this wound here. Yeah. I mean, they don't come to New York until September. It will not have died down. If anything, Yankee fans will just work up more angst. And here's the other thing.
Especially with Judge making his comments.
Exactly. Yeah. One of their first series on the road this year is in Anaheim. You think, that's a safe place to play. Dodger fans are buying up tickets in Angel Stadium.
Oh, wow.
They're
wow.
cooking up all these ideas and signs and bringing garbage cans to games. And then they'll go to the next city, whether it's Chicago or wherever it is. People are going to think of ways to get themselves on SportsCenter. That's what this society does. Yeah. So Astros are going to get to a point around May or June, and they will not be able to believe it that this is still active.
Have you ever played the game Taboo, the board game Taboo?
I have not.
It's a game that has
a word game, Taboo?
Yeah, there's a buzzer.
Yeah.
Because when someone says the word that they're not supposed to say, you buzz them. And I picture MLB stadiums full of people with the Taboo buzzers going off.
I just think it's going to be a mentally exhausting season for the Astros. They're going to wish this thing to die down, and it will not. You know, Bregman goes 0-for-12. What are we thinking about? He doesn't have any help. Altuve goes on a hot streak. What are we thinking about? Well, he just had a great homestand. They must have figured out something else, a workaround to this. So I think the mental toll on the Houston Astros is like nothing that they can expect.
Now, this is a ridiculous question, and I won't blame you if you just take off the headphones and walk out of the studio, but in my warped mind, who, as someone who writes a column every day, this is what I think. Yes, this is bad for the game. It's also good for the game. Baseball struggles to get this kind of attention. Now, it's not great attention. I have a feeling ratings will be up for Astros games. I have a feeling this keeps, like you said, it's going to keep going. And I think the attention is going to be on baseball more than it's been in years. Now, this is not what obviously Rob Manfred wants the attention on. I wonder, though, if this in the long run is not the worst thing for the game.
It's actually a fair point. It is a two-sided coin. There's no question about it. I mean, people who have a casual interest in baseball or even no interest in baseball know about this. I mean, my mother-in-law lives up by the Canadian border in Washington State. She doesn't follow baseball. She knows about this. So right. I understand now you're reaching people, and the Astros are like, they're national news. I get it. And it takes something big for baseball to be truly national these days other than postseason. But on the whole, I think the net is a negative. I really do. Right. It's just when you strike at the integrity of the game, man, there's nothing worse in sports.
I agree with you totally there. And that's the overall theme, is that the integrity of the game here was compromised. I will say, while it may not make up for that part of it, every sport, even the NFL with their ratings dominant, every sport needs a villain. And now baseball's got the biggest villains they could possibly get. I think that ends up being a plus for the season. Yes, the integrity is compromised. I'm not denying that, but it's good to have a villain.
Yeah, well, I think you're right that the Astros, if you look at, I'm sure, their ratings and their appearances on national TV, I mean, they were kind of, because of their postseason play the last 3 years, had a pretty good profile nationally. But yeah, there should be a bump there. There's no question about it. But again, I don't think it's worth what the sport is going through.
Right.
But, you know, you walk into a ballpark now and, you know, if somebody has a big game, you know, the casual fan is going to joke that he must have a buzzer in his shoe or, you know, a buzzer underneath his jersey. It reminds me of the steroid era. I've seen so many parallels to the steroid era that when anybody would have a good year back in the late 90s, early 2000s, well, it must be because of whatever pharmaceutical product he was using. And that's not good for the game. I get drawing and generating interest, but not all negative interest to me is worth it.
Yeah. Let me move on from the Astros. Are we going to get this new playoff format, you think, with we go from five teams to seven for each league, best record gets a bye, and then what I think would be huge for the sport, and I love the idea of the live selection show.
Yeah.
Are we going to get that, you think?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because that was a really big idea, right?
Yeah.
And have you heard boo about it? Really very little about it because the Houston situation is crazy because that is a huge fundamental change. I think we're going to get it, and here's why. The TV partners like it.
Right.
MLB absolutely likes it. The players, when you get them down to, you know, really admitting it, they like it too. And why wouldn't they? You're talking about more players with a chance to be in the postseason. You're talking about more teams being competitive now, right? And that's been their big beef. And I don't blame them. The last few years, if you couldn't win 90 games or say 88 games, there was no sense of you going out trying to make your team better to get there if you were a 75-win team. But now, if you can get into the postseason as an 84-win team, and that would be the average number of wins for a number seven seed, it's hard to sell your fans that you can't compete now.
Right.
That means you got to go buy some players in the offseason. You got to try to improve. That's good for players as well. And the money that's going to come in from the networks is going to filter down to players. So players get more money, more postseason appearances, and more teams competing.
And don't most teams or players get postseason bonuses too as well if, you know?
That's part of it as well. So I think this is something now where the timing is right. MLB has shopped at least the idea of this format to their television partners and ones who want to get in. And they have found a very robust market.
Television is going to love this.
Every
network is going to love this.
And you know the media landscape right now is still in a disruptive stage in terms of where we're going with streaming. Baseball leveraged the whole disruption of the regional sports networks. The cable money is just tremendous. That has settled down. Once this wave settles down here with streaming and over-the-top services, I don't know what's on the other side.
Right.
Baseball doesn't know. That's why I'm saying the timing now is right to make this commitment. And to make the commitment, I think you have to say to the players, we need to extend the CBA, because if I'm a TV partner and you're telling me your CBA runs out in 2 years, why am I signing on to buy these postseason products? I don't even know if those games are going to be played.
Right.
Guarantee me they'll be played. Extend the CBA, and then I'll write you the check for the extra postseason. And it's interesting you brought up the selection show. That seems to be something a lot of people are divided on.
I don't see the downside to that. I think
there really
phenomenal.
Is no downside because if you want to call it a gimmick, you can go ahead and call it a gimmick. But you know what? People like gimmicks.
Right.
Gimmicks help sell your sport. The alternative is you just see them by their win total. You know, straight cut and dried.
Right.
There's no drama. Last year, if we had that, we would have a show where Brian Cashman would walk into a studio and he'd be on the clock to pick from among who he wanted to play in the first round, the Indians, the Rays, and the Red Sox. All week long, you're talking about that pick. Oh, right. I'd pick the Red Sox. Are you crazy? The Yankees don't want to play the Red Sox. They're the seventh seed.
Right.
But they're the Red Sox. Just think about all that. And that will carry into the series, whoever they pick. That's why TV networks love it. That's why you and I would tune in to watch it.
Absolutely.
So I don't have a problem with
that. You'd probably be hosting it for one of the networks.
I think it's a pretty cool idea. I like the fact, the biggest thing for me is it brings more teams in play, yes. But think about what it does for September, right? Number one seed, you get a bye in the first round. So you know playing out the schedule is really important. Number two seed, you get the pick. You have a first pick of who you play among 5, 6, and 7 in the first round. Same with, and then the 3 gets the second. The difference between a 4 and a 5 seed, you either have all the first round at home or all on the road. That's the difference between 4 and 5. That's huge.
Huge.
And of course, 7 or 8. 7, you're in the playoffs. 8, you go home.
Yeah.
So almost every game you're playing in September now really, really matters. I went back and looked at an average game in September last year, September 15th. Just took a random date. 15 games. Only 3 games involved 2 teams that were in the playoff hunt. Head-to-head.
Right.
There's just too many games that don't matter in the second half of the season, but especially in September.
Yeah.
Now you're juicing up September a little bit.
I love the idea of that selection show, too, because baseball doesn't have, until the postseason pretty much, they have the All-Star game, but they don't have that one night, that one, you know, that 1 hour, wherever it is, where the, you know, everyone's going to, it's become so localized, but that show will be a national audience for that show. And you're going to bring in, I think, a lot of people. The only thing I would say is, you know, sometimes MLB, they do a little, they do some stuff with scheduling that just avoid any NFL. Don't go head to head with anything related to the NFL. Do it on when, anytime there's no football game, and you will get big ratings for that selection show.
Yeah, well, they would do it at the games on the last day of the season all start at the same time, which is a great idea. It's typically 3 o'clock. So say 7 o'clock. You can have the show at 7
Perfect.
O'clock on a Sunday night. But bingo.
They
you just,
get a good audience.
You just hit on really the key for baseball. In the old days, we always loved just the grind of the season, the marathon of the season. Baseball was this like reliable buddy who was with you every day. That does not sell in a very competitive sports landscape now. What sells is events. And baseball understands this. In the course of such a long season, you have to carve out things that are live events that people want to watch. And there's not many on the calendar. The All-Star Game is certainly one of those. They've done a great job playing games in very unusual venues. This year it's going to be at Field of Dreams.
Right.
That's an event. Playing a game in London is an event. Having a selection show on a Sunday in September or October, that's an event that's not on the calendar right now. So you're creating revenue, but you're also creating an event, and that's what people want.
And TV will love it. Like, and you know, you said the word. It's funny. I wrote about this the day that I think the Post broke the story about this proposal, and I was surprised because when I wrote about it in my column, I was all for this, and I was surprised at the blowback about how many people were against it. And you used the word gimmick. Yes, it's a gimmick, but every sport has gimmicks. The DH was a gimmick. It's been around 40 years. Like you said, they're playing games in London. They're playing games at the Field of Dreams. Why would this, you know, why would this be any different? I think the selection show, and you know, you imagine, you use the example of Brian Cashman, you know, going to make his pick there. You could spice that up by having, you know, if you want to make it a real TV production, you have like Luke Voigt come in with his biceps and his ripped a shirt off and pick. I mean, there are ways to make this a really interesting selection show.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't mind having some Hollywood quality to it. I mean, you have to make it entertaining as well, right? So I think I used to go through this with Bud Selig, the old commissioner, a lot, where he would complain when, what you just said about baseball comes up with an idea and baseball was held to a higher standard than the NFL. The NFL changes rules literally every year. The players on the field don't know them. What's a catch? We still don't know, right?
Right.
Nobody cares. They just the NFL. They can do whatever they want. And I would tell Bud, that's a good thing for your sport. People really care that much about the game that when you begin to touch it in any small way, people get up in arms about it. So that means they care. But at the same time, I think baseball, as you said, it's changed a lot anyway, more than people really think. And the first reaction is always with baseball is, don't change it.
Right.
What are you doing? You're watering down the playoffs.
Right.
Well, people want more playoffs, and they haven't expanded the playoffs in a long time.
Baseball can't win because it's like you just said, you know, people don't want change. They get very mad about anything, the tradition of the game. But then it seems like the narrative for baseball is always, you know, before this Astros thing happened, it's always, you know, baseball's only appealing to older people. How does baseball get younger? Does baseball have a marketing problem? Now, to me, this idea, especially with the idea of the selection show, more teams in the playoffs, that helps the marketing problem. So that you can't complain that it's a gimmick and then complain there's marketing issues with MLB.
Yeah, and you're right. That's been a big complaint, but that baseball doesn't market its stars or its teams enough. And this is certainly something that would definitely generate interest. So listen, I think when the more people think about it, there's really not a downside to it. If you're a super traditionalist, I guess you would say, and I've heard this, you know, that number 7 seed might have a losing record, which is true. You know, if you did the numbers over the last 8 years, out of 100, I think it's 112 teams, only 4 of them would have made the playoffs with a losing record.
Right.
Some people say, I don't want any in, but think about what that 7 seed has to do. They have to win 2 out of 3 on the road just to get out of the first round against a better team.
Right.
And then they don't have the road advantage or the home field advantage in the next 2 rounds.
I don't think people really
It's really hard
took
to get
it in.
Through.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Listen, the Cardinals won the World Series with 83 wins not too long ago, right? If the 7 seed on average is 84, it's not that drastic a change.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot here. I don't know if you'll have answers off the top of your head. If you don't, that's fine. But if we talk about the marketing of baseball, if I said to you, okay, we're going to make you commissioner for a day, give me 2 to 3 things you'll do right off the bat to market the game or maybe bring in more viewers, more fans to the park, anything to grow the game. Do you have things?
It's really just one big thing. I truly believe if you took the way baseball is played now, which is played at an extremely high level, I mean, the pitching in the game is just sick. I don't know how anybody gets a hit. But you take everything the way the game is played now and play the game in 2 hours and 45 minutes, you have a great product.
Mm-hmm.
At 3:10, you have a terrible product. And that's what we're giving people now. As far as a choice for people in a world where there's so many entertainment options, baseball has chosen by default to give people less action over a longer period of time. Everything being done in this world is the inverse of that, giving people more action in a shorter period of time. That has not changed in years. It keeps extrapolating out longer and longer. The dawdling between pitches really is where all the fat is in this game.
Yep.
So players don't want to hear it, but you're going to have to institute a pitch clock. I think after a month or 2 months, they would adjust. They keep saying, I can't do it. Well, you know what? More than 2/3 of the players in Major League Baseball today have played with a pitch clock because they use it in the minor leagues now.
Right.
They're literally training on it before they get to the big leagues. Now it's not that big
of a transition. You think we'll ever get it? You think we'll ever see the pitch
clock? I think
we
have to. I really do because these little nips and tucks baseball keeps doing, whether it's limits on mound visits or automatic intentional walks, they're coming from the right place, but the effect is minimal. What they really have to do is put together a comprehensive plan that can literally prove that you are taking out 25 minutes of nothingness in the game.
Right.
We're not talking about going back to the 1940s either.
Right.
Baseball was played in 245 like only a decade or 15 years ago.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
It just, again, I know there's a bunch of strikeouts in the game and maybe too many for people and people want the ball in play, but I'm telling you, it's the perception of action as much as the actual action.
Right.
It's sort of like the NFL. Once the NFL started going to a lot of no huddle, right? You didn't want to walk away from the screen. Something looked like it was going to happen really quickly. So in baseball, if you can cut the number of seconds between pitches from, I think the average now is about 28, 27.
That is unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
That is unbelievable.
And guys go beyond that.
Right.
So that's just kind of an average.
Oh my God.
And it's getting worse, by the way. It literally is getting worse when you look at the numbers year by year. So if you just cut that down and make the game move faster, I think people would enjoy the product
a
lot more.
I think you're 100% right. I think that is by far number one. Number two, and I say this from a selfish standpoint, as someone who loves baseball and writes a column every day, you know, let people on Twitter post the highlights. That would be nice. Don't go after people for lifting your video. Let people promote your game. That's all they're doing, is promoting your game.
Yeah, I mean, if that's all they're doing, that should definitely be to baseball's advantage. Now, there's, as you know, people want to protect their brands. And you don't want things being misused, but I'm sure there's ways to police that.
Right. But meanwhile, it was Twitter that, you know, sort of broke the case of the Astros with the garbage pail. So that was...
Yeah, that was fascinating because...
And you're not even on... You're like the one media person still not on Twitter. How did you find out about that video?
No, I think that the fascinating thing to me about that was you heard stories about what was going on with Stein stealing and all that stuff, but it became so visceral when you saw and then especially heard the sound of the trash can there. Yeah. That's where I think it really became a huge deal. It was going to be big anyway. Yeah, yeah. But whenever you have video and sound like that, man, it's like people really got it. And I think the fact that it's kind of high tech and low tech, they're using electronics and technology to steal signs, but they're delivering the information by banging out a trash can.
$14.99 garbage can from Home Depot. Yeah. So we'll still never see you on Twitter. Still going to hold out on us on Twitter.
I think you have to clean up the landscape a little bit before I jump in.
It's only getting worse. It's not getting cleaner.
You know, it's funny. People who are on Twitter, they all tell me, "Man, I wish I wasn't on Twitter." Yeah, that's so a great endorsement of it.
If I ever leave this job, you will never see me on Twitter again. That's for sure.
There you go. There's another one.
Yeah. couple of like quick things because I've kept you long enough, but I got to ask because I'm a diehard Yankee fan and my guy, of course, is Jeter. Do you know the lone holdout on the Hall of Fame vote?
No, I don't.
Should that person be forced to come forward?
No, it's it's not a big deal to me. You know, Griffey, when he didn't get in, there were three people who didn't vote for Junior, and we still don't know who those three people were. I mean, I get it. One stands out a lot more even than three, but it's really not that important to me. I don't think you have to, track this guy down and ruin his life,
No.
Who knows why he did it, but I mean, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. If you get 75 or 99.9.
As a longtime writer and sort of like the dean of it all, and do you have any issues with the voting? Do you think too many people have votes right now?
No. I think it's about 400 now. I think it's a good cross section. You know, they call the voting roll probably 4 or 5 years ago now, where a lot of people who are older lost their vote. Mm-hmm. I know some of those people who lost their vote, and they're actually really huge baseball fans still, and I think they're very wise people. I mean, you have people now voting on players that they didn't see play.
Yeah.
You know, people who were in middle school during the steroid era are now voting whether these guys should go in the Hall of Fame or not. Literally, I'm not making it up. It's odd that way, but... You know, the system really does work when you look at it. 75% that's a hard bar to carry. And I don't know that there's been that many mistakes, even if you want to call them mistakes, by the baseball writers. I think there's more issues with some of the committees, but the group of 400 year in, year out, I think overall does a really good job.
I heard Chris Russo say this a few weeks ago. And I mean, listen, say what you want about Chris Russo. I know you probably go on high heat with him regularly. Like him, hate him, there's no one who loves the game more than him. I mean, he has got that Forrest Gump knowledge of stuff that's just... Yeah. And he was complaining because I think he said maybe 6 or 7 writers from the New York Post alone have votes. So I don't know. Now, listen, writers move around. It's like any industry. You go from place to place. So if you I don't know. Maybe if there's a way to... I don't know if it's that too many people have votes or maybe there needs to be a better structure of the votes, but you say it's fine the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would change now is there's a rush for writers to get their ballot out there early. Like we get the ballots the end of November and you have to get them in by December 31st. So people can't wait to fill out their ballot and go on Twitter and tell people who they voted for. I don't understand that, but what it does is now people collect ballots and start... You know, it's like you're getting early polling results in as we go through the month of December. And I think it does influence the election. I really do. How could you not? You start to see that, this guy's really gaining a lot of votes this year. Am I missing something on that guy? Or I was going to vote for him, but these people who put their ballots out there, nobody likes Jeff Kent. Why should I vote for him? I don't know why we do that to ourselves. Yeah. Like, does the Academy Award publish partial lists?
it's become
the Screen Actors Guild, when they give out their awards,
it's become a show for some writers on Twitter to say, here's my, you know, they want the feedback, they want, you know, the,
yeah, I mean, attention. Listen, I'm old enough to remember voting when you didn't have that kind of real-time polling, so to speak, going on. And when the vote came out, you were surprised, man. I mean, it was right. It was a true blind vote, if you will. And I think the politics of voting begin to come into play in December. I don't like that. I mean, it doesn't influence a lot of people, but I think it's some it does.
Will Bonds ever get in?
Well, he's only got, what, 2 more years left on the writer's ballot? At this point, I would say no by the writers because he's not trending nearly enough. In other words, the new ones coming on seem to favor Bonds. People who didn't cover the era seem to think it's okay to use steroids and go in the Hall of Fame. So he has picked up a little bit. It's really plateaued. So if you just extrapolate the numbers, I'd say no. Now, the only caveat here is guys like Larry Walker, Edgar Martinez, even going back to Jim Rice, in their last year on the ballot, there's a bump there. There's no question. You really, a lot of guys were on the fence. When they're on the ballot the last year, they'll say, okay, I'll vote for him. I don't know if Bonds and Clemens get that last year bump. That's the unknown to me.
Yeah,
there's a lot
a
of sympathy that goes along with that.
Yeah.
But they're not the types that generate sympathy.
I was going to say, they also have not been the nicest gentleman in the world to the writers, so that's a factor. Last one here, because it came out last week, and this is the SI Media podcast, and it bummed me out. The A's not being on local radio this year. You think it's just a one-off, or you think this may end up happening? Because obviously, we talked about it earlier, streaming. It's still, to me, Now listen, I'm a little older too, so maybe I'm not, you know, that 25 to 35-year-old, but the summer, you get in your car. For me, you know, you put on John and Susan listening to the Yankees, or you're in the house, in the backyard barbecuing, the radio's on with the Yankee game. Like, yes, I know streaming and hookup wise, baseball and radio, like, that should not be a marriage that ends in divorce, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'm with you 100%. And I understand with streaming and the way delivery has changed. For broadcasts, there are other options out there, but those options are not available to everybody the way that, you know, terrestrial radio is. And I agree with you that there's something about baseball on the radio. It's partly because baseball is played when the weather's nicer. You're more portable yourself, and following the game becomes more portable. And I also think it's something that, to me, is especially the older people, it's like a friend that you have to have that game on the radio, and you look forward to it. Are these people plugged into streaming services? How many of them? Not all of them, I would say, right?
So, and it's like you said, in the summer, you're constantly moving around. So you plug in, you unplug, you're in your car, you're driving to the pool. You don't want to be plugging and unplugging. You just want to put the radio on and listen to it.
Yeah, I don't like it. Hopefully there's some fix here, but I do agree that you just can't write this off as, oh, times have changed and delivery and media have changed. No, we get that. But, you know, having the game available to the most number of people in the easiest fashion should be the driving force.
Yeah. Oh, well, I appreciate you doing this impromptu. Really means a lot to me. And, you know, everyone's a huge fan of yours. So thank you for coming on, and enjoy the season. SI, you can read them on SI.com, Sports Illustrated, MLB Network, and Fox. Fox doesn't start doing the games until like midsummer, right? Usually.
Where have you been? No.
Well, FS1.
No.
FS1 has them like
that long.
Yes, yeah. FS1.
I'm Big Fox, as we call it.
Yeah, Big Fox.
Joe Buck. Right around May. Yeah.
Joe Buck doesn't trot out in April and May. Joe needs a little time off after football, and then we see him in the middle of the year. All right. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this has been fun. Right. Thanks.
Thanks. All right. My thanks to Tom Verducci for popping in and doing the pod. He's as good as it gets, and I thought the information he gave you there from start to finish was great. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Again, good pods in the archives there, so dip in and check them out if you've missed any of them. And again, if you can subscribe, that is huge. Hit that subscribe button on whatever service you're listening to. All right, that wraps up this edition. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.